Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Doug.
Yes? It's my name. Don't wear it out. That's our name. Don't wear it out.
I thought we were having technical difficulties.
Nope.
Did you think there might be more after three? I kept going.
I thought you were maybe going to say something else.
Oh, I see. Like, Doug. I've got big news.
Yeah.
See, so that's what would normally happen is you'd go ahead and start talking. At that time, you laid back. It's the unpredictability of it that's part of the fun. I said your name three times as a way of getting into our guest today because he played Beetlejuice on Broadway.
Oh. And
so I said Doug three times to see if you would make you appear.
Am I there?
I mean, you're there in my heart and you're there on this Zoom call. And the dude's name is Alex Brightman. He's been a friend of mine for a bit. I think we started off as both being fans of each other. And now he's playing Richard Dreyfuss in The Shark Is Broken on Broadway.
What a name. I just think such a cool name for the behind the scenes. I love it.
Oh, I see. I didn't know if you meant Alex Brightman or Richard Dreyfuss or The Shark Is Broken.
All three. I was saying Shark Is Brokman.
No, which one was the coolest name? It's Tuesday, September 7th, 2023. Let's go to work. Later. Hello, Alex Brightman. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really energized by that theme song.
Right?
Yeah.
We want people to be really amped up before just talking about themselves for an hour.
Hell yeah.
I'm glad we got you there. I'm glad we got you juiced and pumped and all those other things. Because you have a show to do tonight, correct?
I do. In 2 hours, I will be in front of 800 people. So,
oh my God.
I'm in the theater currently right now doing this. And so, yeah, I'm about an hour and a half. I got to get into a blonde wig and a blonde mustache and beard to play Richard Dreyfuss.
Yeah, he was more of like, it was because he was in the sun all the time. Is that why his hair was blonde? Because Dickie D was never an actual blonde, right?
Right. Yeah. I think that, and I'm more, you know, strictly more in this show, much more of like a dirty strawberry sun bleached blonde. And they give me a fake sunburn as well, which I think is funny.
Yeah. Well, at least you're not playing him in Close Encounters, because then you'd have to have the sunburn on just one side of your face.
That's right.
So 2 hours until curtain and but you're just like super, you can do stuff like this before showtime. You don't have like a long regimen of exercises and stuff.
Not for a play. This is the first play I've ever done on Broadway. And so for musicals, I'd have probably, this would not be happening at this time, because I'd probably have some time to do like vocal warm-ups and getting into crazy costumes and microphones, but plays require much less of you, like technically. So.
Yeah. So it's more chill. I like it. I like the people from musicals getting to do plays from time to time, you know,
like, you like it. I love it.
Still be in the game, but get to relax a little bit. Like, it's still got to be nerve-wracking going out there and Because you're at 90 minutes in a boat with two other actors.
That's right. And it's, and the stuff we pack into those 90 minutes, it's like more, I've been more exhausted doing this show than I have in most musicals I've done, just because there's no let up. Wow. And just because there's no real like crutch. And I say that really loosely, of like being able to like, you know, tantalize with a song if the acting's not going well. So this is one of those where, you know, it's like, if I'm not acting well, I'm just not acting well in front of these people. So it's it is like a different kind of muscle that I'm flexing, but I'm thrilled. I'm really happy they took a shot on me to do this.
And it just sounds like, from what I've heard, I can't wait to see it, but I've just heard that, I get the impression that the interplay between those three actors, similar to their work on screen, is just pretty entertaining.
Yeah, a lot of brutality, especially from, you know, there's that, you know, sort of storied feud between Robert Shaw and Richard Dreyfuss, and it's really shown with no real soft edges in this show. I get pretty physically brutalized, verbally, you know, brutalized in the show, because they just didn't like each other on set, which I think part of it made for great chemistry. You know, part of it made for like the chemistry you see on screen about how they're kind of at each other's necks. And part of it is because Robert Shaw genuinely would lean in to Richard Dreyfuss before they called action and just said, "Mind your mannerisms, boy."
Well, and that's the thing that's got to be crazy, to be in your shoes and go toe to toe every night with for the other Doug. By the way, this is Doug Mellard, my co-host and stand-up comedy friend.
What's up?
Hey, man.
Just to catch him up on it if he didn't know. Robert Shaw's actual son co-wrote this play and plays the role.
Oh, I knew he was in it. I didn't know he wrote it. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So he has to.
He wrote it, actually. Just this, I find this to be fascinating all the time I say it, is that he found to be an interesting story. Of course it is, because we all know what the story is. But he also found his father's drinking journal, which I didn't know was a real thing. And it's basically a notebook that chronicled his time during Jaws and a little maybe before and after, about drinks he didn't drink, drinks he wish he drank, drinks he failed on not drinking. And then he would write kind of, you know, paragraphs.
Sounds like a
about...
Chumbawamba song.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Well, I guess truly it is like an I get knocked down, but I get up again kind of thing. But he really does. He took a lot of like source material from that as well, just to like get to know his father and his real struggle with alcoholism that he really touches on in the show too, which I think is like the bravest part of it all, that he's showing his dad in exactly the light he was.
Ooh.
Yeah, which has got to be downright scary, because you grew up watching that movie, and even just as a viewer, you found his character intimidating.
Yeah, right.
And then now you're face to face with a guy that looks just like him.
That's right.
You know, and even kind of a more fit version of him, if I dare say.
Yeah, you're able to say that. I gotta say, sometimes on stage, because of how crazy and brutal this is, there we hug before and after the show, and I think that became kind of routine. But I think it's really important, actually, because there are moments where I'm on stage as, you know, Richard Dreyfuss, but I'm still me. And he's, you know, saying these awful things and giving me these awful looks. And part of you as an actor goes like, this is to Richard, right? This isn't to me. So I kind of get a sense of like, you know, this is an intense genealogy. You know, it's an intense gene. Yeah, feel it every night for sure.
Yeah, that's crazy. I love it. And, you know, I can't wait to see it. And have you seen the Barbie movie? Not to sound like I'm just changing subjects wildly.
I was expecting the weather next. If I didn't realize I was being so boring. No, I haven't. I haven't had the
start singing. It's taking.
That's right. Yeah. No, I haven't. I haven't seen anything. I've been really locked up into this kind of play, and wonderfully, I've just been really all consumed by it. So no, I haven't.
Well, have you looked at the clock in the last few moments?
Never looked at the clock.
Because it's time for you to do your 11 o'clock number.
Okay. I'm ready.
That would suck asking you to say, hey, but seriously, the Barbie movie, you said yes, you saw it?
No, I haven't. I wish I did.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it doesn't matter if you've seen it or not, but I just want to say that, you know, your show is called The Shark is Broken. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe the people in marketing over there can have some fun with, you know, everybody's riding the wave that is Barbie.
You right. I know what you're going to say.
You could say it's, yeah, the shark is a bro, Ken.
Ken. Yeah. I actually think there is something somewhere, maybe not even from our advertising department. I think somebody else has latched onto that somewhere. But yes, no, I have heard the Ken of it all.
I always think I'm so clever when I come up with these things, and there's, you know, people have thought of it and rejected it already.
Well, I remember when I first met you, I remember you were working out Take My Wife, Please, and I had to tell you that was actually something that already had been written.
Right. Well, I just wanted tried to get a more polite version out there. Take My Wife, I Beg You.
If you wouldn't mind.
Good, sir.
Yeah.
Well, that's we met because you were on one of my other podcasts, Doug Loves Movies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I've been on a couple times.
Yeah, but that's like I reached out to you on social media and was like, yep, "Hey, I'm doing it in New York. Would you be a guest?"
Yeah, because I think you'd seen either one of the shows I was in or you were planning on coming, and I was already such a fan of yours that it was one of those first moments I had on Broadway where I was like, oh, cool. Like, cool people that I like are going to reach out. That's nice.
Well, I hope that more people and cooler ones have reached out in the interim. But I was very excited because, yes, I was already a fan from School of Rock, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then Beetlejuice was happening, and I saw Beetlejuice in when you started doing it in D.C.
That's right.
Before going to Broadway, I saw it in D.C. And then I think that's the collision there was then you were in New York on Broadway. I did it on a Monday when you had the night off.
And then I joined you in Philly one time. I think I did. I joined you in Philly at like the Punchline, I think, or something like that. I can't remember.
Helium. It was probably Helium in Philly.
It was Helium. It was Helium. That's right.
That's amazing. I totally forgot about that one.
It was me and it was the first time I met Doogie Horner as well.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Everybody's got to meet Doogie. Is the the show is called Wide World of Dougs, and he's sort of
Doug.
He's kind of an honorary Doug, even though Doogie in his case is not a nickname for Doug. That's not where it came from.
I didn't know that.
It's shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, that is shocking.
Yeah, I knew it like for years, and every time I'd see him again, I you know make some reference to him being a Doug, and he'd be like, no.
That's I always just thought it was short for Douglas.
Yeah, which you know would be a really cool name, and I might have mine legally changed. So we met when you did the show there, and I was coming through. And then since then, here's the crazy thing, that's wild to me is I've seen you on stage in three different shows, and I'm about to see you in a fourth, and. Three of them are musicals and one isn't, but all of them, it seems your entire career is motion pictures turned into stage shows.
Yeah, I guess most of, you're right. Yeah.
Which I'm sure no other Broadway performer can really say that. With that many shows under their belt, you'd be in other like types of, you know what I mean? Like just to always be in, and it's not, because it's not a specific genre, because obviously, each of the movies is a different kind of movie.
Right. I've never thought about that, actually. That's fascinating. I've never I've never thought about it that way. I'm really flattered. I've only been in seven Broadway shows, really, and you've seen four of them. It's like crazy.
I'm including, even though...
Oh, Spamalot.
Broadway, yeah, Spamalot was... I got to see that in D.C. Right. And but, of course... You're when that comes to New York, you're in this show, The Shark is Broken.
Yes. You know, and who knows? I don't know if what the future holds for that is me being in it in the future, but my hope is to eventually get back to doing it. But yeah,
it feels like a very fun show to just continue to rotate cast members in, much like what they've been doing with The Little Shop of Horrors.
I couldn't agree more. Again, based on a movie, I'd go into that too. but I really, you know, I'm trying to think of other people that have done this. What I'm taking out of that is I'm really flattered that people would trust me with the source material. So I'm really, I guess I'm really honored to hear that, actually.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the other thing that's been impressive is that with the case of being Jack Black or Michael Keaton and now like those two, you made those rules your own, but now with Richard Dreyfuss, you need the point is to be as Richard Dreyfuss-y as possible.
Yes, the accuracy part has been its own kind of rehearsal process, is going back and being in a mirror more than I would have ever liked.
Well, I hope you have the hat on and, you know, beard going, and
that makes it easier for sure.
Really feeling it.
It's the voice and the mannerisms, and I mean, I have the inherent Jewishness down, so but everything else I had to kind of figure out. I guess we have a similar kind of voice, like a little nasally, but I had to kind of figure out what it means to be from Queens and things like that. It's been really fun. It's an ongoing process for me. You'll see it kind of in its ongoing process.
Well, you know, here's another pitch. There is a musical version of The Goodbye Girl. It's actually got some pretty good tunes in it. And, you know, you could get that going again.
Couldn't be more down. I'll take on the entire canon. I'll do Mr. Holland's Opus when I get to a certain place.
Yeah, I mean, the guy is really, he racked up some big hits that could all use the musical touch. Wow. So we're talking, Doug, to the king of movie Broadway.
Yeah, that's me.
The KOMB.
Yep, and all hail.
I could talk about Broadway all day, but we're here to talk about names. So the first name I'd like to throw out at you is Ned Schneebly, because that is the greatest. Of course, that's the character that you play in School of Rock pretends to be Ned Schneebly.
Correct, yeah. The
original. So the, yeah, and that's my favorite. I've told you this before on Doug Loves Movies. It's one of my favorite names of a character ever.
I can't agree anymore. I mean, I think it's the most bold name to name. It's like if that's like a placeholder name almost. They were going to get a more normal sounding one when they actually went to shoot the movie, and they just kind of forgot about it. Ned Schneebly kind of came through. It's a great name.
All you got to do is imagine Mike White saying it, and it's like, okay, sold.
Yeah, good, completely. I completely agree. Name. It's a great name.
You nailed it, Mike, when you called yourself that.
Yeah, big fan, Mike. I met him once and I should have told him that.
You should have thanked him for Schneebly, because you have to say it, you know, many times over 8 performances a week. And, you know, it must tickle you every time saying it. It's just fun to say.
Let me tell you something about that word, though, is that I used to have a stutter when I was in elementary school and middle school. It was a pretty severe one that I sort of helped, you know, with therapy and also doing theater really helped. Schneebly is not an easy word for a stutterer who has every once in a while has a relapse. And so there were certain performances where it almost seemed like a choice, but I was really laying on the SCH. Took me a little while to get past to the N of Schneebly. And so, yeah, it's a great name.
You just
hit
it pretty hard just now when you just said it.
Yeah, well, right now I'm good right now. But on stage a few times in front of no less than 1,400 people, they got to watch me try to, you know, stutter my way through, which was always exciting in a live performance.
You know, Doug, one of my favorite things about Alex is that whenever he's talking about a show, he can tell you the exact number of seats in that house.
Yes, that's kind of my thing.
I think I would have that exact same thing. It's interesting, and also the numbers don't range that wildly. You were with Beetlejuice and School of Rock. You were in the like second biggest house on Broadway, but it was much bigger than most.
Yeah, the Winter Garden is huge. And also, I say how many people are in the audience makes me feel cool.
So Mike White, you met him because he popped in on a performance of School of Rock?
Yeah, he popped in, you know, hung out for a little bit, talked to us about, you know, it's never as long as you'd want it to be, but it's always like, you know, people have to go. So it's like, you don't want to keep people, you know, past this idea, but just got a chance to like, thank him for the shoes, you know, that I was able to fill. And I got to do the same thing with Jack Black when he came, and we had a few people roll through that and Beetlejuice from the original casts. And so that's always a really cool perk.
That's a super cool perk. There was some real, I'd see the videos online, and some pretty cool people from
Jack
from those
Black,
things came through.
Jack Black also brought like the greatest date you could ever bring once he finally arrived. It was like 7 months into our run. We weren't sure if he was coming to see it. We had no idea. And he came, we found out he was in the audience, but we didn't know that his date was Paul Rudd.
Oh.
So it was a real two for one after the show. And they hung out for an hour. They were there for an hour hanging out with the kids, making videos on their phones. They were amazing.
Paul Rudd is, both those guys are super duper nice. And, yep. But Paul Rudd, when his name comes up in association with Broadway, I always think of that he was in a play with Michael Shannon and Ed Asner and Michael Shannon's wife, who I apologize for not remembering her name. Mm-hmm. And, the four of them in this play. And I saw it one night, but I wasn't there the night. Somebody in the balcony just threw up on a bunch of people in the
yes, that's right. I have heard about this.
Yeah.
That's right.
Oh my God.
Can you imagine? It's like this diarrhea plane thing that just happened.
Yeah. Is it the same person?
What?
Is it the same person?
It's the same person.
Incredible. Always coming out one end or the other. She can't take her anywhere.
Yeah, that person. She was worried about relevancy. She was worried that her first story was going to start not having as much steam. No pun intended.
Yeah, I don't know why I made it a woman. I don't know if I even knew if it was a man or a woman, but just to be sitting there watching a Broadway show and then just get pelted with vomit. That's got to be a crazy story.
I mean, that's some. Gonna gain some momentum.
It would have
here,
a real splash to it, and you'd smell it right away. And some people would look up too soon and get some right in the eye.
Yeah, but also it's just enough distance from the mezzanine to the orchestra where you really can aerate it like a nice wine. Really opens up on the way down.
No, it really changes its flavor.
Did they stop? I guess they didn't
get it
stop
in your
the
mouth.
Performance, right?
I think they stopped. There was somebody one time when I was doing something at the Lakeshore in Chicago, RIP. It's the Laugh Factory now, but I was doing either stand up or marijuana logs, but I think it was marijuana logs. And somebody like the third row threw up and did one of those things where they did like a casual throw up where they didn't ever admit to it. They just sort of passed out in their seat after vomiting. And, once people start smelling it and reacting, like nobody handles it in a low key way.
Yeah.
They start to realize there's vomit like at their feet. So we took an intermission and still like it ruined the show because after we came back, there was just they just didn't have on hand what they needed to clean it up enough. So it just smelled bad.
Oh God. The only quick story I can compete with that is when we did Beetlejuice, there's a line in the show that says, if you die during this evening's performance, the show will not stop. You know,
right.
The idea, it's sort of almost like our version of a cell phone announcement. And right before the show one night, like 5 minutes, not even before the show, somebody passed out and fell to the ground and completely was out unconscious. So they had to stop. They had to hold the beginning of the show. And we held it for like 20 minutes because the EMTs had to arrive and they carted this guy away. It was a whole real, it's a lot of people and it's in silence. And then all of the tweets that we got that night was, you guys said you wouldn't stop the show if somebody died. So really kind, kind, caring fans for shows. And we did do the show, but I guess we were breaking a promise in some way. But I'm glad to say that he did not pass away, thankfully.
Yeah, that's really, you really dodged a bullet there. Although who knows? Who knows?
I mean,
what?
The show's about afterlife, so
yeah,
to a degree.
That's what I was gonna say.
It would make sense.
Who's to say he wasn't there the whole time?
It's I'm sure that there's a couple of rubes in the audience that really thought that that was all staged.
I'm sure.
You know, like I'm they had a guy pretend to die before the show just to get everybody. Freaked out.
Yeah, totally. That planned 20-minute wait that we all put into every show for the EMTs to arrive. That classic technique to get people really ramped up for a theater show.
Did you ever, Alex, get a chance to go out and see Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark?
I sure did. I saw version 1.0, in fact, before it closed and had to reopen. I saw the very first one.
So did you see anybody almost die in the theater?
I the old I, so when I'm a fr I'm really I hate to admit this, but you did we all went hoping something, you go after you hear so
Well,
much about it.
disinterested, like this is kind of more exciting because the guy they're having problems.
Yeah, and so nothing happened the entire show until the very end when like everyone has been saved and there's like a kind of a the Spider-Man and Mary Jane have this little moment of romance before he ends the show and she kisses him on the cheek and he's in just Peter Parker gear at this point, but you see that he's connected to wires, so a flying scene's coming, and he's at the side of the stage and you can feel that he's caught up in a wire, like he in the scene he's doing, he's clearly trying to shake off a wire. And it's not working out. And she gives him a kiss on the cheek and she says, "Go get him, tiger," whatever she said. And then the music starts wailing and this huge spotlight comes and circles the theater where he's supposed to be. And they pull up the thing and he just doesn't go with it. He just kind of pulls up a little bit, raises back down, pulls up a little bit, raises back down. It was one of the funniest things I have ever seen on a live stage. And it was worth the entire 2 hours we had spent not seeing anything go wrong. It was a really wild time to be on Broadway.
Was such a strange show because, you'd think the takeaway would be, but the music was good because it was all written by U2, but it's almost like it was written by U2 after they had never considered what a Broadway musical even is.
I guess I would love to have been in some of the meetings that was like we should do this kind of meetings, and I because I'd be so curious. I'm sure there must have been a reason, good or bad, but there must have been some salient reason why they spent 75 plus million dollars on it. And I just, I don't know. It's just one of those things where you start to look at what you do as a job, and you're like, God, I wish more people would take this a little more seriously sometimes. Because it really, it kind of, it splashes across the rest of Broadway. So I feel responsible sometimes when there are things that people aren't in love with that you go, yeah, why is that a thing? Some people like it.
Right? It's like being a ride operator at Disneyland. You have to work at a dumb ride, but you have pride in the whole enterprise.
Right. And I'm sure that people that worked on that show, and I've been in, and also other shows that, didn't succeed as well, is like they feel the agency that they can go, and it's kind of an okay show. But if somebody else says your show sucks, you go, hey, wait a minute, that's my show. You do have ownership over whatever you do. So I do appreciate that they went for it.
I love that in Spider-Man they have there's a quick moment where like a car drives by and the radio is playing a U2 song,
I
and
don't even know. I didn't know that.
it just like rubs, well, maybe it was a version I saw, but
Maybe.
it just rubs into everybody's face like, oh, listen to this great U2 song real quick.
Would have been really funny if you left the theater and all of a sudden a U2 album was on your phone.
Oh man.
Never know.
What about how come you're not in Back to the Future, the musical?
I'll answer your question with a question. Who the hell do you think I would play in it? Yeah, if you can find me a
You would
role that you
play.
think I would be good
There could
for.
be a version where half of your makeup is Doc Brown and the other half is Marty, and you spin around, playing both roles.
You know what? I've never said this before. That's a great idea.
Just because you can't you're right, you're not really right for either right now because you're between, but like
Yeah.
nonetheless I could imagine, especially with when they go to make the movie, maybe you could play either the roles through the magic of aging or de-aging that they seem to
I'm
be
in.
so in love with these days.
I'm in. I mean, if anyone's listening that's making this, I'm totally in. I'm really available, and yeah, I'm in. I haven't seen it yet, though. I'm really looking forward to seeing it because I hear it's like spectacular.
Do you think that I'll get off of this subject soon, but do you think
Okay.
that the Beetlejuice 2 movie, does that what does that do in terms of like the potential for a movie version of the Beetlejuice musical?
I don't know. I mean, I would tell you if I knew something. I'm really, first of all, very excited about that movie. But second of all, I know that there was like ideas and whispers when we were doing our musical before COVID that we were going to film the show for posterity, which would have been great. Didn't happen. But I know that the writers, all three, Eddie and Anthony and Scott, were thinking about wanting to do an animated musical movie.
Oh, that's neat.
Which I think would be super neat and could really accomplish a lot of the stuff that couldn't really be done on screen in the way they'd want it to. And I think animated would be such a fun thing. So I know that's not dead, no pun intended, but I just haven't heard much, you know, about it. But I thought that would have been really cool and only amplified by the Beetlejuice 2 of it all.
Yeah.
Why the hell am I not in that, by the way? I want to be in that.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'll make a couple of calls.
All right.
I think they finished shooting it, I think.
Damn. All right, that's okay.
When's this? I was going to say when it's supposed to come out. We're not supposed to promote those things at this time. So,
That's right.
Have you got
how to see the shark is broken?
Exactly. Well, like, that's the thing is, they're like, you know, Jessica Lange is like, yeah, I'll do a play right now.
I know.
I'll do Broadway. Like, there's going to be some amazing people on Broadway because they're like, well, I might as well do that. Jason Alexander thinks, though, his theory is a lot of actors are not racing to do that because of the long commitment of the show and the fear of, like, the strike ending and then being, like, quote-unquote stuck in a show.
But let me speak to that for 1 second, though, because I think that this excuse of, oh, I don't want to, like, commit myself to something for a long time. My thing is this. I think there are incredibly talented people that do film and television. But it's not just about getting on stage and, you know, it is about doing it 8 times a week. It is about doing it. It's really strenuous. So I think a lot of the time, like, I always think that movie actors and film actors have a tough time doing it, not because of the commitment, but because they don't realize the actual commitment. Even if it is 3 months, it's 8 times a week on Broadway is hard. So I think really, really great people are coming this season who actually can do it. I think, like, Aubrey Plaza is going to be on Broadway this season, or off Broadway, I think. And then Sarah Paulson, obviously, and then Jessica Lange. It's like all these great people that really can do it. So I'm really happy that the right people and not just sort of the gettable people are trying to do it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it hasn't become like there's been waves of it in the past where there's just a, you know, kind of random stunt casting. And,
yeah.
It seems to have leveled off. Like, the, I think the Broadway fans are so vocal that I think now they do less embarrassing moves.
Yeah, I think they want to see someone be really good at something. I think that getting someone to the theater is one thing. You can put it whatever celebrity you want's name above the title and you'll get a ticket, but word of mouth will go away instantly if the person's not good.
Yeah. Now, that's why most Broadway shows are good, in my opinion. You know, is that, like,
I agree.
You look when they're rating them, there's very few that are like 1 star or a bomb. You know, there's some that the critic just didn't jibe with or whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, for the most part, it has to be, it just goes through so much to get to that point that it kind of has to, you know, it can't not be good.
That's what I always say, Doug. I'm not kidding. I say that I think it kind of can't suck because of how much work went into it. I mean, I don't think you're allowed to say it sucks. You're allowed to say you don't like it, but I think that there's too much work that goes into these things.
Yeah, I wish more critics used "not for me" over "it sucks."
Yeah, but, that's right. You know,
but it's true because even the most, you know, fervent Broadway, you know, fan has shows they don't like, because what? How do you exalt everything? You know, you got to have some things that are less than, so that the things you really love can be, you know, fill your heart the most or whatever.
If you made a show that everyone liked, it would suck. Like, that's the thing.
We say that all the time about stand-up comedy, especially after a bad set. You're just like, well, you know, if they all loved it, then I'd probably be terrible at this.
I just think it's good to leave people a bit itchy. I'm okay with that.
All right. Well, I could talk about Broadway all day, but we got to do some adverts. We got to stick some ads in here, so we'll do that. And then we'll come back and talk about Alex Brightman and his name right after this.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And we're back to Wide World of Dogs. Dogs, yeah!
We are back. Quickest breaks in the business. And that's because you guys are great with the finger on the fast forward button. All right. So, Doug, do you have any questions about Broadway, Beetlejuice, Jack Black, etc.?
Yeah, just curious if you kind of skimmed over who came out from the original Beetlejuice movie.
Oh, yeah.
Can you drop a couple of those names?
Yeah, sure. I could drop. I'll drop two big ones. I'll drop Gina Davis and I'll drop Catherine O'Hara. They both came. Wow. And they both came on stage afterwards, actually, which was really fun. They came on stage to say hello to the audience, but also when the curtain dropped, they came back and just were great, wonderful hangs. And both exactly who you were hoping they would be. Like, that was the greatest part, is that it weren't like toned down versions of, like, you know, they weren't just, you know, these celebrities that know that they're celebrity. They were so great and down to earth. And that was just made it so much more exciting that they were there. And they love the show, which was nice.
Oh, yeah. Catherine's like royalty.
She's the best. She was like so cool to, like, every once in a while look over and be like, that's Catherine O'Hara.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really she's one of the greats, and Gina Davis, you know, that I'd just be like, holy shit, it's Charlie Baltimore.
Hell yeah. Well, I would say it's what's her name from League of Their Own. I can't, Dottie Henson.
I'd say she's what's her name, whatever she was called in Accidental Tourist.
All right, well, I would say that she did a cartoon that nobody heard. No.
Okay, so all right, we're good then on Broadway for now. I'm sure it'll come back up again.
I'm sure
very soon, but we have some warm up questions before we get to the main event. So let's do that. Starting with, what, sir, is your tattoo situation?
I have no tattoos.
Zero
tattoos. It has no religious reason. I'm not going to be buried in a Jewish cemetery, and so I don't have a real reason. I'm not really keen on them. I like when other people have them. I don't have them.
That's like the perfect answer, but, you know, from a person who doesn't have them.
Thank you.
You know, to toss in the part about how you like them, because that's how I am. I like a good tattoo. I enjoy it very much, but not for me. I can't commit.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was like born into me. Like, my mom certainly was like, I don't think she was like huge on tattoos, but I don't know. It's the same reason I've never smoked a cigarette. I just like didn't, I like smelled one when I was young and I was like, no, not for me.
That's great. That's really good that you, avoided that for that reason, you know.
I'm happy because I'm a singer. It just makes me very happy that I ever got involved. But I would say this too. There's a guy in our show, Colin Donnell, who plays Roy Scheider. We're back to Broadway. This has to do with tattoos.
Yeah.
That he has a lot of tattoos, and he has like five or six that are a full display, like very thick, like tattoo lines. And because Roy Scheider didn't, you know, really where Colin has them, he has to get here an hour early, and they cover them up for the show because he has to.
Oh, wow.
He does like a very famous like Roy Scheider sunbathing scene where you see he's in a Speedo. He's in like a very Roy Scheider black Speedo. And so one of the other reasons I've been thinking about never getting a tattoo is because of that. I have plenty of friends that have to get them covered up for roles. And, oh, sorry. That's the theater that they're testing the sound system. Just give me a sec. Sorry.
It doesn't sound that bad on our end.
All right, that's fine. It's just there's a lot of it's people talking to each other over a microphone and thinking that they're comedians as well. They're not. The tattoos.
You can put the
thing,
podcast on live. If you want to test the speakers, just throw some.
Right. No, but I just like, I think it would take me out of a role, I think, that I would want, and I don't want to have to cover them up.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It's because then you're playing somebody like as you're standing there, whatever costume you have on, like is scratching up against the you know bandage or whatever they however they covered it, or the
and makeup, like having to wash off makeup off of all your tattoos after it's all a lot. I don't understand why actors get tattoos.
Yeah, Doug Miller,
yeah, Doug has a lot of tattoos, but he's a stand-up comedian, and his biggest acting role to date is playing a lunatic who would have a lot of tattoos.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, they kind of look fake.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, no, I don't have one. I think I'll never get one. I don't have a reason to, so I'm not really big on them.
Yeah, Doug puts on a dinner jacket, and he looks like an upstanding citizen.
Oh. the only time.
They're all in the right places for that. But, like, yeah, actors that are going to have scenes like that, it's wild. But taking them off hurts as much as putting them on, I'm told. So
I imagine, yeah.
Yeah, I do kind of keep them hidden a little bit.
Yeah, because isn't that why you got them to keep them hidden, Doug?
Exactly.
Yeah.
They're little treats. They're little, like, you know, when somebody gets to the bottom of the soup bowl, they get to see a little picture or something. A little dog or something. Okay. Speaking of dogs, have you in your lifetime been involved in naming any pets?
Yes. I had two dogs growing up that we collectively named Punky and Sadie. So Punky was our male dog. Sadie was his sister. So I think my brother and I had a hand in this. I don't remember why it was Punky. Everyone thinks it's Brewster, but it's definitely not, because it wasn't part of our life. And then our dog, my current dog that I have, who has a humongous fan base, but much bigger than I do for some reason, his name is Kevin. And my sister-in-law actually found him on the streets of Oklahoma City. He was a pure stray dog. And she kind of named him because she's always wanted a dog named Kevin, but she sort of checked in with us, and when we took him out of the shelter, once he got all this stuff and we decided we were going to keep him, we, you know, really doubled down on Kevin, and it's just been the greatest gift. Like, he's a great dog, but every time everyone hears his name is Kevin, it's like a whole different thing. We love it.
So good.
He's the best.
It's so funny without being strenuous, because, like, also I enjoy the ones where the name is just ridiculous, you know, like somebody I know, I think their dog is something like Mayor Cutie or something like that.
Yeah,
it's just stuff like where they give the dogs a title and stuff is always
funny. Go ahead.
We came up with one a few weeks ago, Mr. Tomato, and I'm still laughing at that. That's so silly.
I like a first and last name. Like, I know someone in our neighborhood that has a bulldog named Winston Churchill, and then I know someone who has a small dog, my friend Anna Roisman, who's a comedian. I think you know Anna.
Yeah, yeah.
Her dog is named Bobby Flay.
Yep. It never ceases to confuse me.
Yeah, I do.
Her dog.
Yeah, same. It always takes me a second. I always want to say, how do you know Bobby Flay? Every time she talks to me about it. It's her dog.
Yeah, so be like, Bobby Flay isn't eating lately. And I'll be like, what?
Do you care? Why does that affect you? It'd be really weird. It'd be really weird if she was like, Bobby Flay's back with Stephanie March. That would be, and then there's a Shih Tzu named Stephanie March, would be even funnier.
I love it. Thoughts and prayers though for the Bobby Flay the dog, because the dog's had some health issues, but I think things are good now though, I think, but right. You never know. Never hurts to think about doggies like that. Kevin, though, doesn't need a last name, because it's just so terribly perfect.
I agree. It's bring us a lot of joy.
Yeah. A friend of mine has a little chihuahua named Cheryl.
We found a dog in Central Park named Mervin. And it was like the perfect. I was like, did you just say what I thought you did? It was this little, wonderfully ugly, cute dog named Mervin.
Perfect. This sounds like such a nerd.
Yeah, totally.
Such a little nerd. All right, so those are great. All those dog naming stories are great. What about
Are you a person in your life who's had a car or a boat or, you know, anything, surfboard, that you gave some sort of name to, like,
yes,
addressed it with a name regularly?
Absolutely. I had a Volvo, like a one of those like tank looking Volvos, that was white, and I named him Winthrop the White. I don't know. I can't manufacture that one for comedy. That's real. And so that was when I had totaled my car before that, and it was a green Volvo, and I can't for the life of me remember what the green one was called. But I had Winthrop for far longer than that. And then I have a car now with my wife, and the car's name is Sassenach, which means Outlander, because we like the show Outlander.
All right, well, let's back up a second.
Okay, sorry. You didn't get all that in one shot?
Good. No, I got it, but I appreciated the second part, but I have a follow-up about the first. I have a theory about the name Winthrop.
Yeah.
Do you think you got that name from the stuttering child in The Music Man?
Well, yeah, I think it must. That's the only reason that had to have been in my head. All I want, right? You know what's funny? I feel like I'm in therapy right now, because like that really is something I've never thought about until you brought it up. and that I love musicals and I used to stutter. But I think my reason for the Winthrop of it all was that it was, I wanted to be like something the White, you know, like Winthrop the White felt like off the tongue good. But now that you're saying this, man, I bet it is deeper than that. I bet it was because I was a young stuttering child.
And there's no reason other than that, you know, like movie or show for you to even know that name, because nobody goes around with the name Winthrop.
Oh, for sure. I knew the name Winthrop from The Music Man, for sure.
Yeah.
I can't even begin to tell you how my life has just changed in this moment. I have to go back and think about this.
But that's not little Ronnie Howard. What he says Winthrop and has a hard time saying it, right? Or is his name Winthrop?
No, his name is Winthrop.
His name is Winthrop.
His name is
Andy Winthrop. And Eddie has a hard time saying it, yeah.
Yeah, he has a hard time saying. He has a couple of different compounded speech impediments.
Yeah. And then on Broadway, you had good old Hugh Jackman going, "Ah, it's all right." All right, so that's all right, Winthrop.
It was crazy to see Harold Hill do the Berserker.
Okay, now we're back on Broadway.
Okay, sorry.
What does the cast and crew of The Shark Is Broken call it amongst themselves? Because you can't say the whole title every time.
It's pretty boring, this answer. Everyone just says, "How's the shark?"
I thought that might be the key word.
Yeah, I gotta, you know, again, people are like, and then we gotta be at the shark by five, or we gotta be at the, you know, the whatever. Or people ask me, my friends will ask me outside of the show, you know, "Is the shark still broken?" I'm like, yeah, it turns out it is. Yeah, we call it the shark. In text messages, easier too.
Yeah, no, I knew you had to get it down to something. And I was, you know, T-Sib, that doesn't seem that that great.
Although that's what comes in on my emails. T-Sib is on the emails.
T-Sib.
Yeah, T-Sib. T-Sib is on the emails.
But broke also is a fun word to say.
That's true.
In casual conversation. Are you ready for broke?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only other words to be used would be the and is, which is not really that great.
No one knows what the hell you're talking about.
Well, because that's in a lot of titles, so I could be talking about a lot of shows.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are the warm up questions, and let me glance at the clock. Oh, we're almost out of time. Great. So let's talk about your name one part at a time, as much as we can get through.
Sure.
Starting with your first name, what are your thoughts about growing up Alex?
I had ambivalence about growing up Alex. My mom wanted to name me Alex because she didn't like the name Alexander, because she didn't want to be called Xander. And so when my mom said his name's Alex, a nurse decided to take it upon themselves to write Alexander. So on everything that I own is Alexander, but nobody calls me that. Nobody's ever called me that. And it's not really what I go by. I didn't like my name for a long time for absolutely no reason. I just didn't like the way it sounded. It sounded too weird. I like normal names and like, you know. So in third grade or something like that, I changed my name for a day or two to Brandon. This is all real. I decided I didn't want to be Alex anymore. I just thought like if I told enough people, I wouldn't have to be Alex anymore. So I got up in front of the class. I asked the teacher if I could do like 2 minutes so I could just get everyone's attention. And I told them, I said, I'm kind of going by Brandon now. So if you could call me Brandon for the rest of my life, that would be great. And then about a day and a half in, I was answering to Alex again. So it kind of didn't stick. But yeah, I mean, I love my name now, but I did not really care for it. I didn't really understand. I don't know. It didn't feel like me for a while.
Did you think, probably come up with Brandon because of the alliteration with Brightman?
This is going to be so embarrassing. Is that I'm really hoping you were going to skip right to my middle name. But my the reason I did it was because I had a friend named Brandon who I thought was cool.
Nice.
And I said, and I figured that like coolness was like part of like if your name could like feed you coolness. I was like, well, Brandon, he's cool. And
How did he feel about it?
I don't, it's a great question. Do you have him here now? Is he the next guy? Is he, I don't know. We were really good friends all through, you know, middle and middle school and all that. So I'm sure he didn't hear about it. That's how short it didn't happen. You know, I'm sure it's like, I was there for like a lunch period and finally someone went like, hey, Alex. And I answered to it and then it was over.
Well, I thought of a good like play or book title based on what you were just talking about. Accidental Alexander.
Oh, I love that.
Right?
I do. I really love that.
I think. Yeah.
Yes, I really love that.
You didn't mean to be an Alexander, but that might be, you know, that could play into the whole becoming an actor because you've sort of like been given one title but behaved like another.
That's I love that actually. I really like that title.
Well, it's yours to keep. Yeah, you know, we don't pay people to come on here. We just give them titles.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, wait until the end. I'll give you an anagram of your name. You're gonna love it.
Oh, I can't wait. Is that real?
Yeah.
Oh, can't wait. That's real. I really can't wait for that. Actually,
it's not that good. All right, okay. So. I'll tell you, I've been doing anagrams of people's names. And when, you know, because ever since I saw Kimberly Akimbo.
Right. We're back to Broadway.
Yeah. And so I like doing anagrams of the guests' names. But when somebody's got like an X or a Z.
Yeah.
New, any of those ones towards the very back end, you really get into some trouble because, you know, you have to include every letter. So it's hard to find enough words.
You can blame my mom for that.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to her in a minute.
Okay.
I just love this whole Alexander plot, if you will, about how just like, you know, it's always a great story for anybody to have like some sort of mistake on the birth certificate that stuck.
Yeah, basically it's what happened. And then I just, you know, now I have to say it when I actually travel like internationally, I can't say Alex.
Like, that's the details of a character played by John Cusack in a rom-com.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so, and then, you know, Alex, I always try to think of famous people that, you know, may have been, you know, in your world or people might have referenced to you when they hear the name Alex. And I guess one of my top ones is Alex Trebek.
Sure.
Did you ever hear much about him ever?
I mean, only from the television when I watched it, but no, not really.
Right, you weren't ever like, hey, I'm also an Alex. Because like I've had very few Dougs to relate to on TV, but like, how'd you feel about, like, did he seem like an Alex to you?
Yeah, although, to be candid, I did think his name for a long time was Alec. I thought his name was Alec Trebek for a very long time, way longer than I
wanted to. That's why you're so cool with it.
Yeah. I mean, I was, I have like Alexander the Great, which I remember the being a thing that I remember being like, okay, Alexander Hamilton, Graham Bell, you know, I don't know if there's a lot of Al's too, I guess, that were interesting, but I guess Alex is different. Alex Lifeson, I guess, what he's, you know, right? Yeah. He's mm-hmm. Rush. Yeah, mm-hmm. Alex Lifeson was Rush.
Yeah.
And then there's Alex's I don't like, you know, but that's okay.
Yeah. Right, and there's also, but there, I was going to ask you about what do you think the percentage is in terms of confusion over Alex Alec in your, you know, day-to-day life, like when you're ordering a coffee or whatever?
Pretty low. Only because I have a really, I'm very articulate. I pride myself on being incredibly like enunciating and all that. So because as an actor, it's one of my least favorite things when somebody is not enunciating. So typically my Starbucks orders say Alex with an X on it. But yeah, every once in a while there's an Alec.
Right. Are they
rude?
Or they thought you said a Alec apostrophe S, you know, Alex.
Yeah, exactly. This is Alex's coffee.
That's my coffee. That's Alex's coffee.
Yeah, exactly.
It is an interesting name, you know, to pluralize when referring to you as like, that's Alex's. Have you gone to see Alex's show?
Mm-hmm.
I always never know what to do with that, like, because I think you got to do apostrophe ES.
Well, I was just going to say that, is that it looks, apostrophe S looks odd, doesn't it? But apostrophe ES is not correct. It's apostrophe S.
It's just apostrophe S, yeah. Yeah. Alex is.
Yeah. I live in Alex constant is. Hell because of his name.
I thought maybe I was going to take a guess that Alex was short for Alex Caliber.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's not.
That sounds like very, you know, that sounds like a very Spamalot name.
Alex Caliber?
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I'm sure that if I was going to be doing Spamalot, that would have made it into my opening night cards.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it still may. if I throw some cards their way on opening night. Alex Caliber, I like a lot.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love it. That's all I'm here for. I can't wait to tell you this anagram.
All right, I can't wait.
We got a couple more minutes because we got to get the big reveal of what is Alex Brightman's middle name.
Oh yeah, is this the time?
Yes, please.
My middle name is Michael.
Okay.
Good night, everyone. you want to know about why, I imagine?
Well, no, I just, let me look at it for a second. We got Alex Nozander, Michael, Alex Michael Brightman. Well, I do love two syllable. Yep. So it's got a nice flow to it. Sounds a little law firmy.
It does.
You know, it does sound, it's classy. It's definitely, all of it's very classy. And then the initials don't really amount to anything worth, you know, like if it said AMB on something you were wearing, people would be like, what's AMB?
Or it looks like I had like a shirt that said lamb on it.
Yeah.
And the L fell off, right?
Yeah, what happened to your L?
Yeah.
It's right here. And then you do the L on your forehead at them. You really, you burn them so good.
I get all my best burns from Doug Benson on these podcasts. I'm going to use that from now on.
It's nothing like planning those burns in advance.
Hell yeah.
You just create a situation where you can make the burn.
Reverse engineer it so I can do it.
Yeah. All right. And then, well, that's the next thing I wanted to ask you about is, you can tell us why Michael, if you want to.
It's a very simple, there's no story to it. It was my dad's dad, but my dad's dad died when he was 16. And so he wanted his name to live on in some way. So his dad's name was Mike.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's living on in this weird way where like it only comes up on driver's licenses and podcasts.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah.
The middle name, as was intended.
Yeah. Yeah. Middle names are the most like, you know, really thoughtful like that, or just so tossed off. And it's like such a wild mix of all of it. But totally. Getting to your last name, because we are almost out of time, is so Brightman, that just amuses me to no end because, you know, not only is there, you know, in fact, a woman who's, you know, very much a big name in musical theater, I dare say, has kind of grown beyond musical theater, and people
that
don't even follow Broadway know who she is, named Sarah Brightman, who you are of absolutely no relation to.
That is correct. As far as I'm concerned, yeah, I don't know. I don't think so.
She's dead to you.
Yeah, she's dead to me, right? Exactly. That's insane.
But like she was what would you call her? Would you call her Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber's muse?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what kind of most people know her for. She was the original Christine in Phantom of the Opera. She's a huge recording artist in the UK. I mean, she still kind of is. And you know, was this big Broadway presence, huge diva kind of like presence, big voice, big personality. Clearly, I mean, a perfect Christine for Phantom. But yeah, that was how many people know her, was that.
Yeah, and so that was like she was at the top of her fame when you were like five or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty young. But the whole time that you've been an actor and in theater, aren't people constantly pointing that out to you, that that's such a wild coincidence, especially because you're in musical theater and so adept at it?
So first of all, constantly with a capital C for all the time since I was a kid doing theater. But then it got to the point where when I did School of Rock, we did the kind of cast announcement where they announced me that I was playing it. Andrew Lloyd, this is on video somewhere. Andrew Lloyd Webber said, not only am I so thrilled to say that Alex Brightman will be playing Dewey Finn, but I'm doubly thrilled to announce that I have no intention whatsoever of marrying him, is what he said, in relation to the idea of Sarah Brightman. And I was like, so, yeah. And then there was this Page Six article that came out right after that said he's the right age to be their kid. You know, like it became this whole weird thing.
Oh, my God.
It's going to follow me, I imagine, for a while, but you know.
Well, could you just admit it on this show just to get us some press that you are their child?
Yes. Mom, dad, if you're listening. By the way, if I was their child, I would be so wealthy, and I'm so clearly not, and I wish that we were related in some way.
This is going to blow your mind. Andrew Lloyd Webber's father's first name is Michael.
Is that real?
What? I just made it up because I
we're definitely related.
Blow your mind.
that's not fair.
Yeah, that was mean. That was mean. Yeah. Okay, so that's a great and wild coincidence. And so then how often would you interact with Andrew Lloyd Webber?
A lot. He was there every day.
Wow.
Of the process, which I did not expect. I expect someone like that to come in and be like, do my work. And then you do it because he's so huge. He was there every single day, just like any other scared composer hoping his show was good. Like, I think that was what I really admired about him, honestly, is that he was just there to make the show good. He wasn't there to like be a presence. And he was anyway, but like he wasn't trying to be. He really wanted the show to work. And I really, to this day, I always think about that and go, wow, that is like really cool, because he could have retired 40, 50 years ago. And he was just as ambitious as he was then. And so wow. It was really cool to see that. Yeah.
And the finished product is not nearly as say what you will about everything else he did, but a word that could come to mind is like kind of stuffy, or even like, you know, maybe elegant. And sure. And that's not the show. It was really delightful that the show was basically a very excellent representation of the movie, and more like that than his other work.
Sure. But I also think it's easy to forget that he sort of slightly invented the rock musical. I mean, like, he did Jesus Christ Superstar. He's a real reverence for rock and roll. So like,
yeah,
the rock love of it all kind of like was really fun to watch it carry through School of Rock, even though he has this history of doing much more like lofty kind of what you said, like sort of fanciful kind of stuff.
I think some of the best music education you could throw in front of a young person is whenever Jack Black is discussing music in the movie, in the movie version. And then you do that on the stage version with, you know, and this is another thing, Doug Mellor, did you know that he was in this Broadway show with a bunch of actual kids and they actually played all of their instruments?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Every single note. Every note was played live by our children.
They'd have to make an announcement before the show.
Yeah.
People just love to assume everything's fake.
Yes, they had, and that was put in late, by the way. That's how real it was, is we put that house announcement in late because people were coming and saying it sounded too good. So people were like, well, clearly it's a recording. But these kids were such masterful musicians that they had to put a sort of a disclaimer at the top. There was like no winning. It was like, you know, people, you know, you see something that's too good, you can't believe it's real.
That was the show. Oh, the music was fake from the kids, and the people weren't really dying.
I don't think that guy's name was really Alexander. I think it's Alex.
You mixed up two different shows, Doug, but we have to skedaddle. This has been so much fun. And here's your anagram.
Oh, yes.
Here's your goodbye gift. You can switch around the letters of Alex Brightman to spell bring a latex ham.
Is that real?
That's amazing.
That's a great one.
Okay,
I'm thinking about is the potential when you add Michael to it. Now it's going to be even, you know, great. I'm going to go do that on my own. You've inspired me.
It's a weird, fun thing to do, but
great.
A fun thing to do that isn't weird is go see The Shark is Broken at the, which one of the theaters is it at?
It's at the John Golden Theater on 45th Street.
Oh, good old Johnny G's Theater.
Yeah, that's right.
When are they going to change that one to a modern actor, actress, or director that everybody knows?
Yeah, The Shark is B at the Johnny G.
You know what I mean? They keep sweeping through and renaming the theaters. And I'm just like, isn't that supposed to be permanent?
I don't know. It's interesting. It's a very weird, it's a very strange thing. I'm just hoping I live long enough to be one of those.
Right? You want your name to be there instead of people are finally sick of Al Hirschfeld. He was never in a show.
I'm hoping just from my legacy, it'll be the Winter Brightman. That's what I'm hoping.
I'm happy. I don't dislike that.
Yeah, okay.
Let's do it. Okay. You bring the spray paint. I'll bring the ladder.
Okay, sounds good.
What's the next massive show going in there? Do you know?
No, I think Back to the Future is going to be there for quite a while.
Oh, it's already there. That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
I think it's going to be there for a minute.
It had to be there, right? Because the car is pretty much real sized.
Yeah, they only had it there. I mean, really, they had one, maybe two options, but the Winter Garden was the prime space because of how much there's so much space up above and down below.
Do you think Wicked will ever close?
I don't think in either of our lifetimes.
Right?
I don't think so. I mean, I just, as long as there are families that live on Earth, I think that Wicked will be open for business.
Yeah, and as great as all Broadway shows are, to open one up that could fill those seats at every show, that's a tall order, because that's the biggest house on Broadway, right?
Yeah, if you want the numbers, I have them. It's around 2,000. It's right around a little above 2K.
Yeah. And those long ass aisles. So whenever somebody needs to get up, they have to disrupt everybody.
Yeah, it's really fun to see. I was in the show for 2 years. It was really fun to see that happening mid any serious scene, watching somebody scoot their way for 5 minutes through an aisle.
Oh, it's the place is massive. That's crazy. But were the flying monkey wings uncomfortable, or did you get used to it?
I wasn't in those, but professionally. But every once in a while, I would have a little drink and I would put them on just for me.
Did you keep that in your drink journal?
Yeah, right. Very good.
All right. So wait a second. Okay. So now they're turning Wicked into a movie. So in a sense, you've been involved in another one that's a movie.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure.
But what? Okay. So just before we go, real quick, what? So those four shows I met, you said you've been in seven Broadway shows?
Yes.
So which three am I missing?
I think Spamalot was not one. It's not part of the seven. I would say we're on Broadway.
So which four have I missed?
Working backwards, Shark is Broken, Beetlejuice, School of Rock, Matilda.
I might have seen you in that. You were the guy that likes TV.
Yes, I was the guy that screamed telly quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then before that, I was in a show called Big Fish.
Okay.
Another movie. And also
another movie. Movies also. It's all movies all the time with you.
I know. And then it was Wicked. And I think the other one you didn't get to see because it was only open for one night, which is an entirely other podcast, is called Glory Days.
And that's based on the film Glory.
It's based on the, everyone thinks it's based on the Bruce Springsteen, but it's not. It's just, it was a very original story and it just didn't work out. So our opening night was also our closing night.
Wow. Well,
you that know, really yep. happens.
You've had both. Whoa. You've had the super long run and the closing in one night. So that's really.
I'm very grateful for it all, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's a great, it's a, once, if you can get past it and succeed like you have, it's a great experience to have had.
It's been very fun.
You got to still be able, as an actor, you still got to be able to remember how awful it could be.
Oh, I do.
Oh my God. Oh, that, when you leave an audition room early in your career, just the, he has a nerve to call himself a Brightman.
Yes, right. Well, that's me saying that to me.
What kind of, yeah, that's mumbling right. to yourself.
Yeah.
All right. So go see at the Golden Theater in the heart of the Broadway Theater District. Go see Shark Is Broken Till. Does it have a closing date?
Currently, we're ticketed till November, I want to say 17th or 19th. I just can't remember the exact date, but hopefully we are going to find out about extending soon. But if not, it's just mid to end of November we're here.
All right. Well, everybody go as soon as you can, but I'm hoping for an extension.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll see what happens if that's enough to make it happen. Doug Bellard, what do you want to plug, buddy?
I'll be at the Velveeta Room in Austin, Texas tomorrow night at 10 o'clock. And next week in Austin at the South Austin Comedy Club on the 15th, next Friday. And then I'll be at the Vermont Comedy Club October 5th through the 7th, opening for Dan Cummins. And then I'll be opening for you in Austin at Cap City Comedy Club on October 24th, which is going to be awesome. Can't wait, dude.
Alex Brightman's going to be in Austin?
You are.
Oh, me. Okay.
Specifically you.
Yeah, I'm going to be there in Austin for a couple nights and stand up in Doug Loves Movies. And I'm doing Doug Loves Movies and Movie Interruptions in Los Angeles. All of my dates and details are at douglovesmovies.com. And it's been a pleasure talking to you, Alex. I'm excited for your success with this Broadway show. Yet another successful Broadway show. You're in one show that's successful, while another show that you were in can't do because you can't be in two places at once. You should be like Michael J. Fox. You should have, made a deal where you run from one show to the other.
Like, don't think I didn't try. And I don't. The way he made. I'm not saying that in any uncertain terms. Trust me, we tried.
You know, because he would run from Family Ties to Back to the Future, and he wouldn't sleep. He didn't. He was on no sleep, which made sense for both of those characters because they were both pretty ramped up all the time.
Yeah, they did rub their eyes a lot. I did notice that.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So thank you for being here or there. And
thank you.
Go see him, everybody. And every show I give the title of the episode is some sort of pun that relates in some way to the guest, and but also has word Doug in it. So as always, the Doug is broken.